From the Land-Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of June, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign, Illinois. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana, will take up the cash grain market. Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and Dave Dickey will bring us today's agricultural news. Along the way today, we'll talk about the research that the University of Illinois has been doing on herbicide resistance in the state, especially with water hemp. This could be a breakout year. We'll hear from Aaron Hager, and we'll preview next week's Weed Science Field Day. That's the 20th, 1 week away from today. It starts at 8 a.m. over at the Seed House on the South Farms. You can always come. I'll give you details on how to make the Weed Science Field Day here on campus during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgro on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In Chicago, on a Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby July soft red winter wheat at 615 and a half was down a half in Kansas City. The July hard red at 640 and a quarter, down a half. From the corn pit in Chicago, 6 3/4 of a cent the gain at the end of the day. As the electronic closed at 2 o'clock Central Time, $5.90 3/4 of a cent. July corn up 6 3/4, but the September on out were lower. The nearby September at 513 3/4, down 12 3/4. December futures at 509 1/4, the harvest month down 13 1/4, and the March corn at 521 3/4, down 12 3/4. May futures at 530 1/4, 12 cents lower for the day. July beans finished at 1406 1/2 on the electronic trade. They're down 28 1/2 cents for the day. The August futures there at 1375 1/2, down 25 3/4, and September at 1344, down 20 cents. November beans 1320, down 17. January 1319 1/2, 16 1/2 lower in the March at $12.93 1/2, down 15 cents for the day. July bean meal at $4.21, down $12. July bean oil at $49.12, 60 cents lower. June lean hogs, or rather June live cattle at $117.35, down $2.20 for the day. August lives at $118.15, down $2.15. The August feeders at $158.85, down $2.30. September at $160.20, down $2.02 1/2. And now the June lean hogs up 35 at $93.87 1/2. You are, of course, listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour for the day. July crude oil at $82.62 a barrel, down 70 cents. Ethanol at $2.04, that's 4/10 of a cent higher. Natural gas, $2.18 9/10 of a cent, down 4 3/10 of a cent for the afternoon. And the RBOB at $2.65, just about unchanged. The heating oil, that's diesel fuel, at $2.60 8/10. That's down a penny and 2/10 for the afternoon. And the gold at $1,618.10 an ounce, finished $5.40 higher. The U.S. dollar at 82.062, that's down 0.361. And the CRB index at 269.29. down 1.57 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, a high near 79 on an east wind at about 8 miles an hour this afternoon. And then tonight, mostly clear skies for the evening. A low 60 degrees with a south-southeast wind at about 6 to 8 miles an hour. And then on a Thursday, mostly clear skies. Or Friday, sunny skies and 92 degrees with a southeast wind at 6 to 8 miles an hour. Friday night, mostly clear and a low 66. Saturday, sunny and 92 degrees. And on Saturday evening, mostly clear, a low of 71. Sunday, sunny and 91. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 71. Monday, mostly sunny and 89 degrees. Monday night, partly cloudy and 69. And Tuesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly sunny skies and 87 degrees. So we'll be warming up as we head over the next few days. We'll talk about that with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour right here on the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take up the agricultural futures markets is Jackie Vakes at Stewart Peterson right here in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's a beautiful day, but the markets were really fickle, it seems, because they want to go both ways, at least in the corn. They want to buy nearby and sell the old,
And sell the new, yes. I think the market is fighting three different things. Probably the major one being money flow coming out because of concerns over the Greece situation and the election coming up this weekend. We also had the fund roll, which should have ended today, and July got a big boost because some of the commercials are there's rumors out there that they're going to hold contracts into delivery, and so they've told a lot of their people to get out of short positions because they really may get pushed higher. And I think that's viable and that's reasonable, because we do have a short crop out there, we have a short supply, and that's one way of getting deliveries.
Well, how long will it happen?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess for as long as they need corn, but I would believe that in the July contract we'll probably see that just through the expiration of options next week, and then we have first notice day at the end of the month, and of course the grain stocks report. And the grain stocks report will probably be the turner if the grain stocks shows active use of corn, which is what I would expect, because we've been cheaper than wheat, then we could definitely go higher. But it'll probably start to move over into the September contract more than July, because they'll begin to pay off the September, after we get to first notice day in July.
Anything that you can learn from the expiration of the May contract this year that might happen in the expiration of the July?
Well, I think that, you know, it's the possibility of it mirroring it is very high. I don't know, you know, it's one of those situations where there's just so much pressure on the outside that at times you really don't know how closely related things are to the real world. But I do think that we could see it do very similar action as it did in the May.
Okay, so was it the outside market that really shoved both beans and corn down in the new crop?
Well, it definitely had an impact on corn. I think there's a number of things. You know, there's some rain in the forecast.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we can attest to here, Todd, is and I've heard it all over, corn must have found subsoil moisture because it suddenly took off and started to grow. Looks nice and dark green in a lot of places. And, you know, traders ride past Illinois corn every single day on their way to work. So I think there's a lot of support underneath it, though. The dry weather is bad in a lot of places. We definitely have talk about Goss's wilt coming in, starting out in Nebraska. And so on the bean side of things, there too, I believe that rain got in there and it really pressured things. But when you look at the overall picture, the Brazilian export sales are already at 89% compared to 70%. You know, that kind of lends some real credence to the rumor that they may run out of beans before July. And I think another thing that was pressuring new crop beans a little bit is we have Informa coming in on Friday. You know, they're talking about maybe Informa's going to raise acres, but I believe the trade's already trading 1 to 2 million acres more, and 1 to 2 million acres in beans is not going to give us enough of a carryout to make a huge difference.
Yeah, that was a rumor, I suppose, that I saw on the wire services or maybe Twitter or someplace that either Informa or the USDA would show a couple million more soybean acres for the July or the June 29 reports. How much credence can you lend to that?
Well, you know, in talking with clients, and that's my best source in most cases, certain parts of the U.S. have definitely added more bean acres. There's no question, at the expense of corn acres. But, you know, that is really variable. And so to try and make a guess on whether or not that's across the whole U.S., pretty tough. But I wouldn't be surprised to see 1 to 2 million more acres. The only question is are the conditions right for all the double crop beans that are figured in there? And we've got an awful lot of dry land out there, and will they plant beans in them? So I think that's the other wild card. That probably won't show up on the report the end of this month, but the market will be looking at that as we go down the road on plantings.
Outside markets have been active, and they've been watching Greece, Spain, other countries in Europe.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, I call them the pigs. That's Portugal, Italy, or Ireland, Greece, and Spain. Okay, those are the four key ones, and Italy's always been kind of on the outside. Italy actually has a GDP as big as California, so it's a really important cog in the wheel. You know, when you look at it, you've got the central bank pushing for this banking union, and one of my guys from Bloomberg sent me a great YouTube. It's a fellow named Nigel Farage. He's actually a UK independent person, but one of the questions he asks is, how do you improve a crisis if you give Spain $100 billion and expect Italy to kick in $10 billion of money that they probably don't have, and including asking for it from other places? Then you have Italy coming out in Bloomberg saying Germans are the champions of pessimism. Things aren't nearly as bad as what they say they are. And then you look at the unemployment rates. Well, Greece is at 21.9%, Ireland's 14.4%, Portugal's 15.1%, Spain is 24.1%. So, you know, it makes a lot of sense that they're just not collecting the money that they used to. You know, and even when you look at us, we're at 8.1%, but at actuality, we're probably at about 14.5% here in the U.S. because of people who are underemployed or people who no longer qualify for unemployment. And so as a producer, boy, you better be paying close attention to this. There's some real big things going on in the next few days. OPEC is going to meet tomorrow. It's pretty much a given, I believe, that Saudi's going to continue to put pressure on they're going to let production continue to go because it's pressuring Iran, and that might make Iran come in and actually be willing to talk with us about their nuclear weapons program. Our stocks today on the EIA showed really good usage, and we even upped our utilization capacity by 92% from 91% last week. Now, Iran is going to meet with the West in Moscow next week.
Mm-hmm.
Got the Greek election Sunday night. And you've got one of the Greek candidates, and this is really scary. His name is Tsipras. Came out and said, "The EU is just bluffing. They're not going to halt funding, even if we don't pay our debt back." What a strange attitude to have. But this is a representative who probably has the most backing, but neither candidate looks like they have enough backing to be to actually be able to set up a government.
Did you see the notes about the Grecian people taking money out of their banks? Essentially, I suppose what they're doing is taking euros out and putting them in different banks so if they do leave, that they don't devalue their personal money, so it would stay in a euro as opposed to become
right.
a drachma. That's kind of a bank run. It ends up piling up, I suppose, though, does it not? If you could, I suppose it could take a bank down, even if they don't leave the euro.
Oh, I definitely think it could take a bank down, and even if they don't leave the euro, you know, the biggest concern is if they don't pay back, we might actually see runs on other banks because of the fact that they could believe that the euro was going to lose value, which it probably will, you know, and. You've got people out there saying that the euro is like the Titanic headed for the iceberg, you know, and you've got to wonder if it isn't true at times. And then, you know, you look at the long-term picture. China had an advisor who came out today, said they think the second quarter GDP could be less than 7%. That would be not a good thing for any of us because they need to be around 8% just to keep everybody employed. Now, that could just indicate we might see more rate cuts coming out of China, which our investors always look at as being positive. And, you know, the U.S. economy's in here, too. If we slip anymore, you never know if Ben Bernanke's going to step up and actually do something or not. And so from a production standpoint and an end-user standpoint, you've got to have yourself positioned to be protected against things that have nothing to do. You know, your crop could be burning up out in the field. That doesn't mean it's going to necessarily have the price you need it to have.
Right. So maybe if we could things that are bearish, things that are bullish. So things that are bearish, the European Union and the Eurozone?
Absolutely. There's no question about that.
China's economy?
China's economy most definitely is one of the things that always sits in the background. The Iranian situation, will there be a war if we don't get anything straightened out? Which would be another drag on our economy. And so, you know, those things, they're all basically outside market things, other than China's one of our users, but they're outside market things. And so, you know, you can't just, I guess what I'm trying, the point I'm trying to make, Todd, is looking out your window and trying to determine how much you're going to get for a price just doesn't work.
And the weather, is it bearish or bullish at the moment? Or both?
I guess I'd have to say, I can't say that it is truly bearish in my eyes, because a half inch to an inch and a half of rain anywhere is basically, with 90-degree temperatures, is not going to do a lot. It'll be help. It buys us a little bit of time. But in general, I think the thing that is probably the most bearish is just that we have seen corn start to look really, really good.
All right.
How long that'll last, no one's certain.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Oh, thank you, Todd.
That's
bye-bye.
Jackie Bakes. She's with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign, Illinois. Joins us on a Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Dave Dickey will be here a moment with today's Ag News.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, sugar farmers and companies got a bittersweet surprise yesterday evening as the Senate opened debate on the farm bill by seeking to phase out the sugar program. Senate leaders announced early Tuesday evening that debate would begin on an amendment by Senator Jeanne Shaheen. The amendment would require USDA to phase out the tariffs on imported sugar and ratchet down the loan rate for sugar. Meanwhile, Illinois Senator Dick Durbin went to the Senate floor on Tuesday to reiterate the need for cost savings and crop insurance. Durbin said farmers are buying insurance to protect themselves against the risk of low prices or bad weather. But he noted that 62% of the premiums are paid by taxpayers. Last year, the federal government spent $7.4 billion on premiums. Durbin said the largest 3.9% of farmers accounted for 32% of the premium support. Durbin says, quote, "We can't justify continuing to provide this level of premium support to the wealthiest farmers." An amendment offered by Durbin would curb the premium subsidy by 15 percentage points for any farm making over $750,000 adjusted gross income. The International Monetary Fund today says that Russia should tighten its monetary policy to prevent its economy from overheating. The fund also says that it welcomes the central bank's policy of a more flexible ruble, but sees inflation growing beyond the Bank of Russia's year-end target of 6.5%. The Labor Department today says that a steep drop in gasoline costs drove down a measure of U.S. wholesale prices in May. The producer price index fell 1% after dropping 0.2% in April. Gasoline prices dropped nearly 9%, the most in almost 3 years. Food costs also fell. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can hear anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Now, up next, researchers right here on this campus are very concerned that this will be the breakout season for herbicide-resistant water hemp across the state. I'll have more on what farmers might expect to find in their fields.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Herbicide resistance in water hemp for about a decade. Over the last several years, they've been screening samples from fields across the state. Now, those samples no longer come in from southern Illinois, says Aaron Hager, because farmers there know some weeds are resistant to herbicides.
That's plural, not just glyphosate herbicide. The samples coming in today, says Hager, from the upper two-thirds of the state, suggest herbicide-resistant water hemp could be an explosive problem this season.
The problem or the evolution of the resistance continues to spread to the north, where more and more samples that we receive for screening purposes have originated from over the last couple of years, and many of these are coming back, indeed, resistant to glyphosate and or other herbicide families as well.
That's right. The water hemp is resistant to not one, but sometimes several herbicides.
And based on the survey results that we've had, the vast majority of the plants and the fields that these plants were sampled from contain resistance of one sort or another. And many times what we find is that it's almost a rarity that plants, individual plants anymore, are resistant to just one herbicide. It's becoming more and more common that these plants actually are resistant to two, or perhaps three, or even in some cases four different herbicides within that plant. And when we find populations in fields that have different types of resistance, well, then we may find three different types of resistances within that field. We may have individual plants from that field that are only resistant, say, to glyphosate or to an ALS inhibitor, but a neighboring plant may be resistant to a second family, and a third closed plant may be resistant to a third family. So really, we talk about multiple resistance both at the field level as well as the level of the individual plant.
Farmers wanting to learn more about herbicide resistance and weeds in general are invited to a couple of field days. The first is the University of Illinois Weed Science Field Day, Wednesday, June the 20th. It starts at 8 in the morning at the Seed House on the South Farms. There is a $10 fee, but that covers coffee in the morning and lunch. There's also a weed science field tour scheduled for next month, July 24, at the research plots in the northern part of Douglas County. You can call 217-333-4424. That's 333-4424 for details on either Weed Science Day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
This is the Closing Market Report. You're listening to us on a Wednesday afternoon. The folks at the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana, on the phone line to take up the agricultural cash grain markets. Mark Russell is there. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for taking the time with us today. Oop. Well, Mark was supposed to be there, but I'm not sure that he actually made it. We'll figure that out just a bit later. A couple of things that are coming up that you might want to know about. Of course, next week, you already heard that you can come in and visit with the folks in the Weed Sciences, Crop Sciences and Weed Extension Department at our Weeds Day, which is on the South Farms. That starts at 8 a.m. in the morning, and please do just show up. There is a $10 fee if you'd like to stay for lunch, but it's our Weed Science Day. You can find all the information about that, of course, on the Bulletin website. The address is bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. In fact, there you see all kinds of interesting things, including articles by Emerson Nafziger about the condition of the crop. I know one will be posted tomorrow because I've seen it already about water use and what that looks like in corn and soybeans. And then one that was written last Saturday as an alert, especially for those of you who are in the northern and northwestern parts of the state of Illinois, as it pertains to the western corn rootworm and its apparent adaption in part of Illinois, although that's not confirmed, and certainly confirmed in Iowa, to technologies in the BT corn that have been, in some cases, used to control it. You want to check all that out at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu.
It's National Lobster Day. Prior to the 20th century, lobster was not a popular food in the U.S. In fact, eating lobster was considered a mark of poverty, or as a food for slaves or lower members of society. and lobsters were also used as a fertilizer for farms. The market for lobster changed when modern transportation methods allowed the live shipping of lobster from ports to large cities inland. On this day in agricultural history in 1789, Elizabeth Hamilton, wife of Alexander Hamilton, the first Secretary of the Treasury, is said to have served a new dessert treat to General George Washington. The highlight of the dinner party was ice cream. After its introduction, ice cream often appeared on the presidential Thursday dinner menu. By the way, an entry in Washington's ledger reveals that he purchased a cream machine for ice at Mount Vernon. In 1817, Richard Lovell Edgeworth died, an Anglo-Irish inventor. Among his many inventions and innovations was a turnip cutter, as well as various improvements in agricultural machines, including a one-wheeled carriage adopted to go over narrow roads. And in 1893, African-American inventor T.W. Stewart received a patent for a mop. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City is on the phone line to tell us whether the rain is or is not in the forecast for any part of the Midwest and how things may or may not be changing. Tell me, please, what you see, Drew.
Boy, I'll tell you what, it's been a long time since we've seen a weather pattern like this where it just doesn't seem to rain under any circumstance. And the big miss in Indiana this week was a very bad thing. Indiana needed that moisture. It's not that there's other areas in the Midwest that aren't in the same boat, but the fact that so much of Indiana was missed this week puts them in very dire straits for moisture. And now we're looking at a weather pattern here that doesn't generate any rain for them for at least a week. And that's way too long, along with the fact that we're going to have warmer temperatures coming back in again as we move through the weekend into early next week. And it's not just an Indiana thing. Of course, we have a much larger area in the lower and eastern parts of the Midwest that are hurting for moisture. And all of these areas are going to stay that way because this next frontal boundary is not going to be allowed to push into the heart of the Midwest. It will stay in the northwestern areas, impacting the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Nebraska. Those areas will see frequent showers and thunderstorms over the weekend and into the early to middle part of next week, and they'll have plenty of moisture around. But everybody else in the Midwest will be dry, and temperatures will be pushing back into the 80s, even some lower 90s. We just got the midday model updated here not too long ago, and there was some suggestion of a stronger ridge in the eastern part of the country during the second half of next week, right before a colder air finally pushes into the region. So we're looking at a week to 10 days from now for the next viable rain event for some of these lower eastern Midwest locations. So some of these early crops definitely going to be at odds here to lose yield. But we do have a lot of crop in the Northwest that's going to be in great shape. So who knows, maybe we'll come out looking okay on average, but it sure doesn't look that way right now. It's a very scary situation, actually. And we'll see maybe some cooler weather will start to dominate as we finish out June and go into July. I don't think we'll see nearly as much heat in July as we've seen so far this season. That should help some of these crops, so we just have to get more moisture to fall across the region.
Is there anything on the global scale that's changing that might give us a better chance of rainfall in that time frame?
Yes, we are watching the symptoms of El Nino development are becoming more and more commonplace, and we think that we will start evolving towards an El Nino in July and August. That's getting pretty late. Maybe we can bring some needed moisture in for soybeans a little later in the season. El Nino will add moisture to the atmosphere, put a little more energy in it, give us a chance for a little bit of more rainfall, but it is going to take a while for this atmosphere to get beefed back up with moisture. It's really hurting in a lot of places in Northern Hemisphere right now.
If not the United States, then we really need to have China produce a pretty good corn crop and even a soybean crop there. What are the prospects?
Well, China is has about a third of their corn crop right now under the gun also with dryness. Now, I say that's a third of the crop. Actually, one third of the crop is produced in the region, but they irrigate some of that, and I just don't know what that percentage is. So there is at least a portion of the crop that is definitely stressed at the moment, and yield potentials are slipping lower. It doesn't look like there's going to be much rain over the next 10 days to 2 weeks in the dry area, which is east central parts of the country. So definitely need to watch them real closely.
All right. Thank you so much, Drew. We appreciate you taking the time.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That's today's edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.